tell us a little bit about Tyler Beede, your first pick, 21st overall. And, a guy who has indicated he wants to go to college and a guy that you guys seem to think you're going to sign.
Yeah, I mean, I think we wouldn't have selected the player if we didn't think we had a good chance of signing him. That being said, we know there's no guarantees at all in terms of getting him signed. But our area scout in that area did a great job getting to know the player, getting to know his family. We did a lot of homework on him, and all indications are that his first choice is to play professional baseball. I got a chance to talk to him last night. Obviously, our scouting director, Andrew Tinnish, had a chance to talk to him, and he's very excited. Even I was in the draft room, people are saying that he's been tweeting things back and forth and so on. So obviously now the tough part is the contract negotiation, but I've been through enough of those, and it's not a process that I enjoy. I seem to not enjoy it more and more each year. Just it seems like all we're doing is arguing over money, whether it's salary arbitration or free agents and so on. But at the end of the day, we're very excited about him. I got a chance to see him pitch a couple of weeks ago, and we think this guy has a chance to be a real impact starter for us.
Alex, I think, you know, for people listening to this who are maybe used to the hockey draft or the football draft, the basketball draft, where if you're eligible for the draft and you're drafted, that's it. Explain a little bit that process in terms of with baseball. When you draft a high school player, you don't know, he might go to college, and you know how you the calculation that is involved in terms of drafting a guy who you might not be able to sign.
Sure, no, and actually, it's funny that you bring up the other sports, because we had the front office guys for the Leafs, Dave Poulin and Claude Loisel, came over last night to watch the first round of the draft. I'd invited both Brian Burke and Brian Colangelo, and Brian Burke asked if he can get some of his guys over to watch, and we talked a little bit about it during the draft, you know, what they go through with the NHL draft, what we're going through, and they got a chance to watch some of it. But it's not the same at all as the other sports. We're drafting high school and college kids. They have the ability to go to school. Again, they have to be willing to sign. If we don't sign them, we lose their rights. With the way the process is set up, all we get back is the pick the following year. So if we pick 21, we don't sign the player, we get the 22nd pick in the draft the following year. So it's a complicated process overall, and we found a way to get a lot of guys signed.
Now, Alex, when I saw footage of Beede pitching, he's from the Northeast, I instantly thought of Chris Carpenter, and I don't remember Chris at that age, so I can't compare him in terms of style or you know, repertoire, such as a pitcher at that age has a repertoire. But how hard is it to project a high school kid out of the Northeast? Because it's not a warm weather area, and it would seem to me that the level of competition may not be as great as you would see, for example, in California or Florida. How do you have to look at a kid like that differently? Do you pay more attention to physical stature as opposed to raw stuff? Or how do you go about projecting that player?
It's certainly fair to ask that, and it's actually a great thing to ask. You know, really, for a position player, the competition, I think, is maybe a little more important, because it's, you know, a lot of people can have a good swing, but that doesn't necessarily translate into the results and so on. And you can always grade out if someone can run and throw. But in terms of the competition and hitting, that's hard. But that's why, for us, summer evaluations are so important. A lot of these kids are highly ranked and highly touted in the summer. They play in some of the top showcases and events, and they go up against the top competition. And in past years, we would take our amateur scouts in the summer once the draft was over, and they'd go out and see minor league games and basically a lot of pro games, and really to try to be knowing we'd be in the high school market a little bit more, we basically eliminated the pro work that they did, and we wanted to really pound and evaluate all those summer leagues. So we have a lot of looks, we track and monitor a lot of that stuff, and that's a lot of what we do. But for a guy like Tyler, if you do pitch, you're looking at arm action, you're looking at delivery, you're looking at stuff. You're not going to be able to judge him on high school stats or competition, but he's up to 95. He's got a great curveball, great changeup. He's got life, and the work ethic and the makeup is off the charts. So he's someone that is, and the thing with him is his velocity continued to climb because he's in the Northeast, and that's what we did last year with Noah Syndergaard. We saw him in the early 90s in terms of velocity, and then he got up to 96 just before the draft, and now we have him up to 98. So it could be a very similar thing, hopefully, with Tyler Beede, that his velocity is going to continue to spike because of where he's pitched.
Alex, a couple of questions. Have you seen him pitch? And also, you talked about pitchers in the Northeast. I mean, I've heard scouts talk about sort of the theory of the virgin arm, you know, where sometimes you get a guy from the Northeast and quite simply, he hasn't had as much wear and tear in his arm because the season isn't as long. Could you maybe address those two situations?
Yeah, very. That's another great point. One, we got to see Tyler last summer, and obviously you're monitoring just the strength gains and how much his body's changed, and you're looking at what kind of athlete he is. And the reason, especially if you pitch, not that being a good athlete is a must, but it helps because when you have to make changes to a delivery or tweaks and so on, or a coach has to work with you, the better the athlete you are, the easier it is to implement those changes. But from Tyler's standpoint, to see what his velocity was last summer and then to see the strength gains that he made, he's, you know, he just turned 18, so he's a younger high school kid, and his body got a lot stronger. Like I said earlier, he's a great athlete, and he's someone that, again, because of where he's pitched, he doesn't have a whole lot of innings. And I think more so than anything else, he's someone that can really pitch with his fastball. And a lot of time you go see an amateur game, whether it's college or high school players, you see them just throwing a lot of curveballs or a lot of sliders or a lot of changeups. And earlier in my scouting career, I made a lot of errors getting excited about someone who threw a lot of curveballs and sliders. And ultimately, those are the guys that seem to break down. But if you can pitch with your fastball and throw strikes and obviously have the other things, you have a chance to be a very good starter.
How rare is an 18-year-old who can throw 95?
You know what? This draft, it was not very rare. There were a lot of guys. And again, there's one thing if you touch the velocity. There's another thing if you pitch at that velocity. And again, I just saw Tyler pitch, and he hit 95 twice. Again, he hadn't gotten up to that velocity before. He's certainly not going to pitch there. He was more 91, 92. But again, with strength gains, he may settle into obviously a little bit more velocity. The flip side to that is they're only throwing once a week in high school, and now you put them in the five-man rotation, and they're throwing over 6 months. These guys do tend to get tired, and that's where bodies become so important and strength and stamina come into play. So the big thing is you may go to a game and see a guy touch 996, but he might max out, fall off the mound, the ball could be up and away, and basically gave it everything he had. And the scouting report reads that he got up to 996, but we always want to know where will he pitch at to throw strikes.
Alex Anthopoulos joins us on Primetime Sports. With the 139th pick overall, you took Tom Robson, a 6'4 righty from Ladner, B.C., who's pitched for the Langley Blaze. And I mean, the B.C. Junior League, or the B.C. Premier League, as it's called, is just such a treasure trove of baseball talent these days. What makes this kid, as a 6'4 pitcher who is not yet 18, I believe he doesn't turn 18 until June 23rd. How do you project a guy like that? Because now you're dealing with a very large kid, but also a kid who's pitching in Canada. And I mean, how do you project him?
You know, it's certainly hard. It's an inexact science, and we know obviously the failure rate of a lot of high school arms. But again, he's someone that's very young that hasn't thrown a lot. He averages about 90 miles an hour. He's got a very good curveball. His makeup, his character, the amount of work that he does put into his career is off the charts. I know our scouting director, Andrew Tinnish, was very excited about being able to select him. I got a chance to see him when he faced our team in spring training, so I was a chance to take a look at him. But I know our scouting staff is very excited about him. Our area scout, Jamie Lehman, is very excited about him, and he's someone that, again, with age and strength gains and with his size, he should end up doing very well.
Alex, organizationally, do you guys treat Canada differently than any other territory? Do you feel some ownership of this territory and the idea that you wouldn't want to lose somebody under your own doorstep?
I think it's a slippery slope. I mean, partly, sure, you want to make sure that you get the best players, but we don't want to overdraft them. And even when we start to line them up, obviously our scouting director's Canadian, I'm Canadian, but when we're lining them up, I always in the draft room ask him if he was, if he was from the DR or if he was from somewhere else, would we still have him in that spot? You know, Paul Beeston always says, let's not draft him because he's Canadian, but let's not hold that against him as well. And I think it makes a lot of sense. At the end of the day, we have to get the best players, and that's what's ultimately going to lead to a winning product. But if all things are equal, we're going to go with the Canadian kid.
You know, Alex, of your top, let's say, 7 to 10 picks, realistically, do you think you can sign all of them? In the past, there have been some issues, and I mean, you can only offer so much money, right? At some point, if the guy's not going to take the money, you've got to kind of shrug. And I'm thinking about a guy like Robson. I don't know if he has an advisor. He said he did. But I mean, how many of those, let's say your top 10, do you think you can realistically sign?
You know, hard to say. And I think we did change our strategy a little bit from last year. We took the best talent available, but to an extent, because signability comes into play. Because if your valuation does not line up, you may say, look, guy wants, for example, $400,000, and we may value him at $125,000, and we say, look, we're going to pass on that player, even though the next guy is not as good as him. So those are all things that we evaluate. But our theme really for the entire draft room was take the talent, take the talent, take the talent. And we just were going to take the best player available, and we were going to line it up and worry about it after the fact, because if we can go sign 10 players that we think are average, we'd rather get 5 that we think have a chance to be all-stars or great players. And, you know, if we don't sign all of them, that's okay. But if we sign 4 out of 6 or 5 out of 8, we're probably stronger doing that with the best talent than we are signing 8 out of 8 that are just average players.
Is it a straight talent calculation all the way through, Alex, or at a certain point are you looking at organizational depth by position, saying, boy, we're a little short of catchers or shortstops?
You know what? In the past, we would start to talk about it. We have our player development department in there, and they talk about the organizational needs, and we may start taking those guys in the 20th round or even in the teens. And right now, we've changed that as well. We're taking prospects at least through, you know, the 20th round, or really until they all dry up, and then we'll worry about the needs after, because ultimately, if you're just taking organizational needs, those are guys that are going to get released in a year or two one way or the other, and there's always ways to find players. So we want to continue to try to get prospects, continue to try to get talent, and if we have that approach, if it's 1 out of 20 guys that we pick from the 23rd round to the 43rd round, that works out, rather than taking someone that we know ultimately won't get there.
And ultimately, Alex, I mean, that's how you get to be like the Tampa Bay Rays or the Minnesota Twins, isn't it? You've got to have high-end talent. It's not just enough to have sort of that great middle. You've got to have some high-end talent. And in order to do that, sometimes you got to be a little aggressive, right?
No, there's no doubt. And we try to incorporate our pro scouting as well in our meetings. We have our pro scouting director in there, Perry Manassian. We have a lot of charts and boards up. And again, we talk about what a player is going to be, and then I'll try to talk from my experiences and say, well, I can get that type of player. I can call a GM, and that player will be made available. I can get that guy in minor league free agency. I can get that player in trade. So who else is there? Let's get someone, though. There might be more risk that I will have a hard time as a general manager acquiring in free agency or trade. And that's more the philosophy than anything else. And we always try to relate it back to current big league players. And it's more to keep us on track from an organizational standpoint and sticking with the philosophy that we've had.
Now, while we got you here, Alex, just for a few seconds, we should ask you a little bit about the big league team. People are a tough loss last night, obviously, but Brett Lawrie on the DL in the minor leagues. What are you hearing? How far away is he from full health and a trip to Toronto?
Sure, no, he's getting better. You know, we've examined his hand and so on, and the swelling has come down. He's starting to grip a bat, but there's still a little bit of soreness there. But in terms of just, you know, starting to stay in shape and do things like that, you know, we were hopeful that he could get into a game on Friday. I'm not sure if he's going to make it to Friday. In terms of getting in a game, it might be delayed. But again, it's really a day-to-day thing right now. But we need to see him play in Las Vegas more than anything else, and make sure that he gets his timing back at the plate and that his hand is fine and there's no setbacks at all. And really, just before he got hurt, like we had talked about, he was very close to being called up. We were just examining a lot of things with the roster and so on. So those are things that I would, you know, assume obviously are going to go right back into the mix depending on how Brett plays. But we're certainly anxious to try to get him up here because he's done everything that we've asked.
Alex, you had mentioned us before the draft that it was often the case when you're asked about possible trades or, you know, the trade market, that you said, well, I mean, typically it tends to calm down going into the draft. Everybody obviously focuses their resources on the draft, their intellectual resources anyhow. Now that the draft is almost done, do you anticipate the trade market picking up, and how active would you be in that market?
I really believe it'll start to turn. And I was just talking to a GM today, and we just talked about, I was just saying how now reality, it's back to reality, because you sit in the draft meetings for 10 days and you're in the draft room, and he was saying it's the room of dreams. And it really is. You sit in that draft room for a while and all your dream is dreaming on 17 and 18 and 19 year olds. And then you finally get out of there, if you've been there for practically 2 weeks, and you realize we have a big league team and we have games to win. And now it's back to worrying about free agents. moves and trades and things like that. So I'm anxious to get going. Obviously, we're going to start tonight and tomorrow, and to get back to the big league team and to start to focus on trying to make some trades. You know, I continue to try to have dialogue here and there. There's a few things I've had on the go, but I've hit some walls like you always do when you talk trade. But I'm going to continue to try to get after it, I guess, from a trade standpoint. And I know as we get to July, it'll certainly the talks will start to increase.